This is our legal expert, Jeff O'Brien. He's a well-recognized attorney from Lohmann Abdo in such areas as business law, commercial contract disputes, intellectual property, and more. He also knows his sports and can lend his expertise when there are legal issues at play. This is Dave Harrigan, a well-recognized producer and update host from the Mackey and Judd Show. He's not really an expert in anything, but here he is to introduce the topics to Jeff and then nod in agreement every time Mr. O'Brien makes a great point. Welcome to Case in Point with Jeff O'Brien. Here's Dave Harrigan.
Case in point, Jeff is here. I am Dave. And Jeff, we're talking about Xanax. We're talking about wrestling, Jay Robinson, the whole scandal that, started early June or so, actually late May, I guess, technically, over at the University of Minnesota. And thankfully, even though you're the expert most of the time, you've brought in a real expert to help
us
really sort this out. Stacy DeKalb, also of Lohmann Abdo, here with us. Appreciate you coming in with us, Stacy, to help out.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, I'll throw it to you, Jeff, to start it out. Let's just kind of go through the facts of this case. People, you know, may have forgotten a couple things. It's still evolving even today, as we've learned in the papers just today. But kind of take us through where it began at the beginning.
Sure. Well, Dave, there's a lot of legal issues involved with this. We're going to focus on in this episode, specifically, are the employment law issues surrounding what's going on with Coach Robinson. Obviously, he's been relieved of duty at the moment, suspended, and we have an interim coach. And now the news reports have been out as of late that they were negotiating his exit. And of course, as you alluded to this morning, they have apparently the talks have broken down, and this is very likely headed to a courtroom. So let's just kind of go through, kind of recap the facts of all of this. Now, Jay Robinson, of course, has been the U of M's wrestling coach for about the past 30 years. He's had several national championships. Mm-hmm. He's been very highly regarded as a wrestling coach. This was, I think, about April of this year. Some wrestlers had made an anonymous tip to the Minneapolis police or campus police, I forget who it was, that there was some Gopher wrestlers selling Xanax pills, Xanax being a prescription sedative. Apparently, the going price was $5 per pill for anyone on the wrestling team and $8 a pill for anyone else. And the rumor was that they had about 2,500 pills in their possession. Now, when at some point, Coach Robinson learned of these sales of Xanax and called a team meeting, and he offered amnesty to anyone who came forward with the pills and said he would dispose of them.
Yep.
And according to the reports, he allegedly collected and disposed of about 1,400 Xanax pills. And he had ordered the players to undergo urine testing and write a paper on how they felt when they were caught. Obviously, what we're dealing here is that Coach Robinson handled this himself. There's no indication that he reported this to the police or his higher ups, and just handled this internally and wanted to keep this quiet. As a result of that, there's been an investigation. We're all sitting here on pins and needles waiting for the report, which I believe the release is imminent. And he has been, like I said before, suspended, and they are in negotiations with him as to his exit. And we'll talk about that today, why they would have to negotiate with him as to his exit. Again, the issues here, we've got the coach who handled the matter privately and by himself without informing the other authorities or any of his superiors. And the question we have, which we're going to discuss today, is did his actions constitute just cause sufficient for the university to terminate his employment without paying him the balance of what is owed to him under his employment contract with the university? And we've actually I have a copy of the contract. We'll talk about some of those specific clauses. But at this point, I'd like to have Stacy chime in as our employment law ace at the firm to talk about kind of the general rules in Minnesota about employment law, because those kind of frame this discussion.
Yes. Well, the starting point in Minnesota employment law is that unless an individual has a written agreement, a contract, to the contrary, the employment relationship is considered at will. And that means that either the employer or the employee can terminate the employment relationship at any time for any non-discriminatory reason. There are limitations to that, and certainly, as I mentioned, that would be a situation if the employer was motivated by discrimination or retaliation for making a whistleblower complaint, something of that nature. Employers need to be careful when they hire individuals, and this can be in an offer letter or even in an employee handbook that it's distributed, because sometimes there can be unintended consequences of language, and a contract can be created unless appropriate at-will disclaimers are included. Now, in many cases, particularly where you're dealing with a higher-level individual or an executive, the parties negotiate a contract mm-hmm. that has set terms in terms of length of time. That would be the term, as well as compensation and benefit provisions, and provisions as to how the employment agreement can be terminated. And depending upon the type of termination, what financial benefits the individual employee can receive. And so here, one of the big hotly negotiated provisions in an employment agreement is surrounds the definition of cause,
or yeah.
just cause for termination. But down the road, if an individual is terminated, one of the hotly litigated issues is also surrounding that definition of cause.
And is that defined in the contract? You mentioned having Jay Robinson's contract. Is cause defined very specifically, or is it sort of a loose thing? Because it seems to me Jay Robinson's accused of covering up criminal activity. And you could say by accepting the pills and destroying them, that would probably also be criminal activity. How is that not cause? It seems like a slam dunk in my mind. Where do we get the sticky wicket? Where's the hairy part of this?
Yeah, Dave, the contract with the coach uses the phrase just cause. Now, just to get some background on his contract. So, you know, he has signed multiple contracts over the years. This most recent one dates back to January 11th, 2011, where he was going to coach the team through April 30th, 2014. 2012, that contract extended again through April 30th of this year. And then in 2015, the contract gets extended through June 22nd of 2020. Obviously, you've got a coach that's won several titles. They're trying to keep him, you know, locked down. This happens very often in college athletics, especially Division I, where you get a coach that has a winning track record, possibly some interest from other teams or other schools. And so the university is going to move to extend that contract and keep him at the university.
Sure.
So there is a section of the contract that covers termination. Now, first of all, they can terminate him without just cause. But the consequence of that is they have to pay him the balance of his contract owed through the term. So he's got a salary in there of $140,077. They would have to pay that to him through June 22nd of 2020.
Okay.
So they want to find... the university has a reputation for, you know, they terminate a coach, they're usually having to pay money as a buyout. They don't want to have to do that again in this case. So they're trying to find a way to justify terminating him under the just cause clauses and thereby relieving themselves of the obligation to pay him any further. So the key terms, what defines just cause, there's a number of different items in there, but the pertinent ones for our discussion, there are a couple. It says a serious violation as determined by the university of a rule of a governing association by or involving coach. Now, under the contract in an earlier portion, governing association essentially boils down to the NCAA or the Big Ten.
Yep.
So if he has a serious violation of an NCAA rule or a Big Ten rule, that constitutes just cause sufficient for the university to terminate him without paying him anything further. A failure to report any and all serious major or secondary violations which, in the judgment of the university, coach knew or should have known about with reasonable diligence and oversight. And then finally, and this is where the language of this one is a little bit murky, says a violation of any policy of the university or law involving moral turpitude. Now, we talked, Stacy mentioned about, you know, drafting these the right way and having, you know, the right language in terms of defining what cause is. It says it does not include that language as determined by the university, that the previous two clauses. So under the way we interpret contracts, you know, a judge gets in front of this and say, well, the university didn't have the discretion in that. In regards to that issue, because you put it into the other two, the fact that you left it out of this clause means they don't have that discretion. And then it says policy of the university or law involving moral turpitude. Again, is it a policy involving moral turpitude or a law involving moral turpitude, or is it just a policy of the university, period, end of story, or a law involving moral turpitude? Mm-hmm. So you get into these kind of nuances, but that's what we lawyers, you know, have our, you know, why we have jobs, to deal with those nuances. So as you can see, that's, there's no clear-cut reason instance here under his contract where maybe in common sense we'll say, well, he's he blocked this investigation. He's, you know, there's still enough ambiguity in those clauses to force this into give him an opening to challenge termination for just cause. And that's why they've been having these negotiations with him about his exit, because it's going to be more cost effective for the university, which is ultimately is funded by our tax dollars, to have a negotiated amicable settlement than to have to go to court. Because one thing, when Stacey and I reviewed this contract, we also noted there are no alternative dispute resolution provisions in there, no mediation, no arbitration, anything like that. If there is a dispute under this agreement, it does go to court. And there are, you know, and the university is going to be paying attorneys, as will Coach Robinson. So that's kind of the wording of the contract. Stacey, do you want to add some about your
sure.
thoughts on that on
sure.
those clauses?
So certainly, if I was representing the university, I would want to be certain as to all applicable policies that could bear on this. Mm-hmm. I would certainly want to review all documentation regarding what notices were provisioned or were provided, what response was provided by the athletic department. I know that they were involved, I think, as early as March with respect to the drug testing issue. So it's important to review all internal documentation. And I understand there's an investigation that's been going on, and that investigative report should be coming out any time now. It's also important that the university be consistent in what its practices have been in other situations. They also, of course, need to talk to witnesses, talk to the employee. It's important while Coach Robinson is still their employee to bring him in and sit down and ask any relevant questions about the matter. They should evaluate the legal and financial risks, because certainly this kind of litigation can get very expensive, both in terms of money as well as damage to one's reputation. And then ultimately, if the decision is to move forward and terminate, they should be very clear in identifying what is the reason, what is the part of the definition of cause, or are they going to terminate without cause, mm-hmm. That is being relied upon. Because ultimately, if there is litigation, the fact finder, whether judge or jury, certainly is not going to settle for some contrived reason. And I guess the other thing I would just add is that if this matter moves forward in litigation, ultimately it's the employer that bears the burden of proof that the cause definition is met. And it has to be, there has to be sufficient evidence that Coach Robinson's conduct fundamentally breached the provisions of the contract. And there can be a lot of gray areas in that, as Jeff pointed out.
You know, and to expand on an earlier point that Stacey made, Dave, in terms of the at-will employment, and she's mentioned that the general rule is you can terminate someone for any reason, for any time, as long as it's non-discriminatory or retaliation. You know, we talked here about, you know, this there's going to be there's a dispute likely over the definition of just cause, whether or not that standard has been met, and that's going to be, as Stacey mentioned, the university's burden to prove. It's not inconceivable that the coach's legal team is going to come up with counterclaims or arguments that it was discriminatory. Remember, he is over the age of 40 in Minnesota. That can be considered age discrimination. So he may have a claim of age discrimination. The other thing is, as we know, Coach Robinson over the years has been a very outspoken critic of Title IX.
Yep.
and how he believes that the allocation of revenues to women's athletics has affected his program negatively. So he may argue some sort of a retaliation claim given his outspokenness on that topic. So it's not, again, more reason why the university was trying to to resolve this outside of court, because this could become quite costly. It's not just about whether or not cause exists. He may have other claims back at the counterclaims back at them for, you know, as to say, well, this was pretextual. They don't have the standard of, they don't meet the just cause standard under the contract. They're doing it because of this and this. So this could be kind of a nasty fight and a very public fight if this gets into a court.
It also seems to me, though, that like if I'm the judge and I hear Jay Robinson arguing whether it's age discrimination or you know a retaliation towards Title IX things that he's you know said or done, it seems to me that the university could very easily say, no, I'm sorry, this is a brand new athletic director who has no experience here or very little, like going back years he had a different post. But sorry, you covered up the Xanax thing. That's all we're focusing on. Is there a way that Jay Robinson could prove that? I mean, or is that just, you know, simply he can make the argument and the university can say, no, that's not what this is?
Yeah, I mean, this is why we have courts. This is why we have judges and juries to decide this stuff. They'll be put on their case, and whether it be a judge, just a court trial or a jury trial, ultimately they will make the decision as to who has met their burden of proof in regards to the different claims or counterclaims and make a finding one way or another.
Is there part of the investigation that's, you know, we're going to get the report any day, any minute now. Is there something that you could see would, you know, either way tip the scales where the U would finally, you know, put up their hands and say, fine, it's not worth to fight the fight, or Jay Robinson would, you know, see something in the investigation that says, you know, you absolutely covered this up, you did not tell anyone above you or in police, where he would just, like, in the other way, throw in the towel, put up the white flag and say, fine, you got me, I'm out of here.
If the investigation were to come back, in my opinion, I'll ask Stacey for her opinion too, if the investigation comes back without a finding of, you know, wrongdoing on the coach's part, I think the university is going to have another issue on their hands, because obviously his reputation, it being removed, you know, even temporarily as coach of the wrestling team, his reputation is forever colored by this.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be a difficult, you could possibly see a lawsuit coming, you know, from the coach to the university at that point for damage to reputation. If it comes out that finds that he's clean. So this relationship is irreparably broken, and so the question is now is what kind of fight are we going to have, and how much is it going to cost?
And I think that when the report comes out, I'm going to be interested in finding out who did he go to, did if anybody, to seek guidance in how to handle this situation. What kinds of policies does the university have in dealing with this? What training, if any, has he received as a coach in terms of how to handle this situation? I think it's really incumbent upon employers to provide appropriate levels of education and training and guidance about what to do when a situation like this comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Because, frankly, the supervisory level employees and coaches, assistant coaches, that's really the university's first line of defense when issues come up in dealing with student athletes and other personnel. And so their job is coaching and running the program. They can't be experts in employment, in the nuances of employment law and in human resource management. Certainly in the 35 years that I've practiced, employment law is an area that has just exploded. And so it's not enough to, in my mind, for the university to have some policies that are phrased with a lot of legalese and expect someone to be able to follow that and go out and take certain actions. So I'm going to be interested in reading whether or not Coach Robinson's superiors, the athletic department, and I think we'll find out whether they condoned the decisions that he made, the course of action he was taking, either explicitly or implicitly by failing to get back to him, or taking an unreasonable amount of time to get back to him and give him direction.
Sure. Well, like you said, not everyone's the expert. There's very few. And as Jeff likes to say, that's why we have the attorneys, right? So
that's right.
Help us out, both of you guys, as we make this kind of the practical turn here that we do at the end of most episodes. What can we take away, be it, you know, the employee of your local store or business, whatever it is, or an employee who has a contract or is an at-will employee for name your company? What kind of things can we take away from this situation to use in our lives?
I think one thing, Dave, is even if you're anytime you're doing a written employment contract, even if it is an at-will employment situation, that should be stated in the contract. I mean, if most of the time, if you're a business owner, your attorney is drafting the employment contract. There may be some negotiation. Maybe the other party, depending on the individual and the nature of the position, may have their own separate counsel. But a lot of times, it's the corporate attorney putting together the contract and the employee signing it. And we have a kind of a standard of interpretation that ambiguities in a contract are construed against the party that drafted it. So if you have, say, a contract, employment contract that has a fixed term of employment and says nothing about it being at will, a judge could construe that against the person that drafted it, being the employer, and you may have a problem just terminating them, as Stacey indicated, said, for any reason or at any time. And then certainly when you're dealing with for cause termination provisions, and they come up a lot of different ways. I work with a lot of closely held companies where you may have one of the owners is involved in the business, but owns a minority of the stock in the company. Mm-hmm. They may ask for cause provisions in their employment contract simply to avoid being voted out of control by the other owners. So there's the other instances where these clauses are, these provisions are incorporated into an employment contract. When you are doing them, you have to use caution to make sure that they're worded the right way. And of course, you should be using an attorney like Stacey that understands what, you know, the significance of how these could be interpreted by a court, rather than, oh, I found this off the internet, or I drafted this up. Or I took somebody else's contract that I did, or a contract I had at a previous job, and used that. Don't do that. The amount of money that you save coming to us on the front end of a transaction usually is a fraction of what you would pay if you have to come to us on the back end of a transaction gone wrong.
Sure.
And that's really, I think, the key. And Stacey, your thoughts on that too. But I think you just can't. I always say DIY often leads to SOL, and especially with employment law, and especially in this area of an employment law, that's really true.
I agree with that, and I do think that it is important, whether it's the side of the employer or the individual employee, to have any such employment agreement reviewed by legal counsel to make sure there are no unintended consequences. If I'm representing the employer and drafting a termination for cause provision, I might want to have at least one of the definitions be a little squishy, so that if there's conduct or a reason where I want to get rid of an employee, I want to be able to bring it, apply the language so that it can be a cause termination. Sure. To avoid having to pay massive severance amounts. On the other hand, if I'm representing the individual, I'm going to try to get as much specificity and definition around that cause definition as I can. So if we're going to talk about misconduct or a breach of policies, I might want to phrase that in terms of intentional misconduct or willful misconduct or a breach of material breach of some significant policy, as opposed to some minor policy that's really of no major consequence to the employer, but rather something that truly does injure the reputation or standing of a company. Typically, we're talking about fraud, embezzlement, willful misconduct, intentional violation of policies and rules, things of that nature.
All right. Well, perfect. I think we covered it pretty good. Stacy, thank you again for coming by. Appreciate your help helping Jeff out. Frankly, I didn't think he was very good this episode at all.
No. I needed a crutch.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for being here too, Jeff. We appreciate it. I definitely do, because I wouldn't have been able to get 2 minutes without sounding like an idiot. So I appreciate the help. Another episode of Case in Point. Make sure if you're finding us on iTunes, give us a rating if you could. 1 star would be okay. 5 stars would be much better. We'd appreciate the 5, and you can find us again in a couple weeks. Case in Point Podcast. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.